105.9.
City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation. This is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. It's the show that invites each and every different weekday a different guest to imagine that their house is on fire. Don't worry, they get themselves out, they get their family and their pets out. Every living creature is away from the inferno, and they even have time to dash back into the flames and grab a pile of red-hot steaming vinyl. That is five records that they can save from the inferno. And the lady putting herself into that unfortunate metaphorical situation today is Angela Eagle, MP for Wallasey. Angela, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Good.
Not in a circumstance like that, though, because I love music and I'd want to make lots and lots of return journeys and come out with everything saved.
No, that would be dangerous, though, and there's only half the population that would want to push you back into that fire, you see.
I'm not quite that unpopular in Wallasey.
How do you feel popular at the moment? Because it's been a torrid year or so for MPs, hasn't it? It's not been their finest hour.
It has been difficult, but I think actually that I've had a good response because I'm a really low claiming MP, and it's been surprising how many people have come up and said how proud they are that I have not featured. I was a saint in the Telegraph.
That's right, yeah, because they did have their sort of saints and sinners things. Did they get you for anything at all, or did they sort of say...
No, I was in the saints column. I'm in the bottom 11% of claimers, so I never felt comfortable maxing out, and I never did.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because don't worry, this show is not political, really, and it's not about the expenses, but being as we've got onto it, we may as well finish it. A lot of MPs said, that was the system, that's what we did, it was considered part of the pay packet. But the fact that you've said, I never felt comfortable with it, suggests that really there was a moral decision to be taken at some point.
Well, I didn't know that people were claiming duck houses and moats having been cleaned, but then again, I don't own a moat, so...
You've got the Mersey, near enough.
It would have cost a bit more than £23,000 a year to clean and dredge the Mersey, I
think. Absolutely right, but it's the most fearsome moat anyone could
true.
Want. It's, although there are two tunnels underneath it, though, and a bridge over it. Right, you've been in Wallasey since 1992.
Yeah.
You won it with a majority of 4,000, which then kind of went up to more like 20,000, didn't it, in
that's
the
right,
97
that's
election.
Right.
Yeah. You must see that as a fairly encouraging sign.
Yes, obviously, I'm always optimistic. I think, obviously, there's a tough fight this time, but I think that once people start focusing on the real choice, they'll realise that they've got to stick with a government that's going to get them through this difficult time, that understands that governments ought to be active and come to people's aid when they most need it, not just cut and run and leave people to fend for themselves.
This show, as I said, is not too heavy on politics. It's more about the music and the books and the films in your life. I was going to say, the life of a politician, you know, we know that you work hard. I think that's the one thing that most people do agree on. You have long, unsociable hours. Do you have time for music and books and films and stuff, or is it all just work, work, work?
Well, there's a lot of work, 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 but when the Pretenders toured recently, I came and I managed to see them up at the Echo Arena, but I dashed up to Shepherd's Bush Empire after serious voting in the House of Commons and managed to catch an absolutely fantastic show there.
Pretenders so, again, or...?
Yes, exactly.
Because we know you're a big Pretenders fan, and they will feature in this show toward the end, because I know you have a good Pretenders story to tell us as well. But the first one, though, is not the Pretenders. It's a different, powerful female vocal. You've gone for Patti Smith.
That's right. I think she's a fantastic vocalist, very original singer-songwriter, and she's also really realised as an artist. She just does what she feels, and she's always had a very, very distinctive style. So I like all her albums, but obviously because The Night was a big hit, and she actually wrote it with Bruce Springsteen. She was part of the very important art movements in New York. She knew Robert Mapplethorpe, some iconic images from then. Mm. I just think she's fantastic live, and she's a great, powerful role model for women.
Yeah, I knew the thing about Bruce Springsteen. I think it was that he wrote it originally, but it was very masculine in its tone. He wasn't quite sure what to do with it. He was recording in the studio next door with his E Street band, and they were friends and swapping tapes and music and stuff. And he said, "Do you want to see what you can do with this?" And she gave a more female slant on it.
That's right, and it works really well together, I think, that both of them have got very distinctive styles. And both of them are very... I mean, she's very female in a very distinctive way. And obviously, he's a great male songwriter, probably the best American singer-songwriter, I think, since Woody Guthrie, although some people might say Bob Dylan. I don't know. There'd be a big argument about that.
Bob Dylan, Woody Guthrie. I mean, he was very Guthrie-influenced anyway, wasn't he, Dylan? Have you seen Springsteen in concert?
I have, lots and lots of times. Very energetic, fantastic songs. But I like Patti Smith. I think that she did really distinctive things, some great tracks from the early part of her career, things like Gloria, also... things like some stuff that she does now I really like from the Tramping album. She writes beautiful ballads as well as really powerful, passionate songs. And I love that in a singer-songwriter.
Well, let's go for a passionate one now, shall we? It is the Patti Smith Band. Talk 105.9, and that is Because the Night by Patti Smith. What a way to start the show. A good power ballad. You can't go wrong with that, thank can you? And that comes courtesy of Angela Eagle MP, who is my guest for this hour on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. Got four more tunes, plenty more where that came from. Plus, we'll be finding out a few other objects that Angela would say from the metaphorically burning home of hers, or even the metaphorically burning second home, sorry. we've got four more coming up, including quite an interesting selection we've gone for. Eurythmics is coming up shortly, but we also have to save a film as well, Angela. And you have gone for one, which is not known to me, I'm afraid. Los Olivados. Tell us about this.
It means the damned in English. It was made in Mexico by my favourite film director, Luis Buñuel, who was Spanish. He had to flee the Spanish Civil War. He worked then most of the rest of his life in Mexico. And if you think about something like The City of God, that kind of gang film about the difficulties growing up in that kind of atmosphere and trying to get away from it, this film was the original one of all of the films like City of God that followed it. It was made in the 1930s and it features a young lad that's got caught up in the Mexico street gangs, trying to get out of all of that, the rough, difficult life that he has to lead. And he does get a chance to try to get out of it and he nearly makes it, but in the end he doesn't. And it's just a very powerful film full of lots of social comment that really is almost modern. It's timeless.
I was going to say, I wondered if when you chose this film, you had your MP's hat on almost, and if I asked you in a private moment, you'd say, I'd save Meet the Fockers or something like that.
But I love Meet the Fockers because it's actually got Barbara Streisand in, but no, I became a fan of Luis Buñuel as a filmmaker when I was a young teenager and I joined the Merseyside Film Institute Society, as was then. And I saw his first ever film, which is called Un Chien Andalou, The Andalusian Dog. And it's actually a surrealist film made by him and Salvador Dali. And I just fell in love with his way of making films. He had a very long and distinguished career. For example, he fled Franco in Spain, but he was invited back when he was a very well-known filmmaker to make a film by Franco, and everybody thought he'd sold out. He made a film called Viridiana about a nun in Spain. The Spanish Franco, thinking he'd got a coup, actually entered it for the Venice Film Festival. It then suddenly became clear that it was very, very, very anti-fascist anti-right-wing Catholic.
How would he get away with that? I mean, they must have.
He actually had to sneak it. He had his son sneak it out of Spain under his coat. It was banned by the Spanish, and it won the Palme d'Or.
Fantastic!
Just an amazing film director, very profound, but very funny too.
Oh, I like that. I thought that presumably they'd have seen the final cut, but I guess you can always edit these things around and swap the meanings over.
That's right. He kept it hidden from them. Kept it hidden from them all the way through, and it was a fantastic coup de theatre.
People don't join clubs as much anymore, do they? You just mentioned that you joined the Merseyside Film Institute, was it?
Yes.
Do you sort of see that as lacking in modern civic life now, that it's not the done thing, even for intelligent, well-brought-up young people to go off and say, I'm into film, so I'm going to join a film club, or I'm going to join a book club.
Well, it's not the same now, because there was no videos, no CDs, no way of getting to see movies without actually doing something like that when I was growing up. Yes, folks, I'm that old. So it's much easier now to get access to these kinds of things in your own home. I mean, we had a 16mm film club, and we used to have to order all of these things in. But that's where I saw all my first art films, and I'm a big film buff.
And it's a lot more sociable, though, isn't it, to watch it with a group of people and almost to feel obliged to discuss it afterwards rather than, you know, from the comfort of your sofa with a bottle of wine and a bag of Doritos.
Absolutely.
I can see how that would work.
Yeah, it's very much more sociable, and maybe we should get back to it.
Absolutely. Another organisation you joined at the age of 17 was the Labour Party.
That's true. I was a big joiner.
Yeah, yeah. What else were you?
Actually, I was waiting. I'd been waiting to join the Labour Party until I was old enough for them to let me in. For years, I was always political from a young age. We talked a lot about politics at home. And I think the thing that made me political was listening to the stories that my mum and dad told me about what had happened in the family. Mm. My mum was a very intelligent woman who passed the 11 plus, but was very working class. They couldn't afford the uniform at the grammar school. And in the end, she went back to the secondary modern and ended up working in a factory, a biscuit factory. Nothing wrong with that, but she missed a chance. My dad, still alive, my dad, was is a great artist and wanted to go down to the Slade in London and paint, but he had to go out and find a job, so he ended up in the print trade. And I just felt that with that sort of thing happening in my family, we needed to have a society where people could actually reach their full potential and not be cut off just at the time when, from opportunity, just at the time when they could really have flourished.
You were born in Bridlington in East Yorkshire.
True.
And yet you grew up on Merseyside because you went to Formby Comp. So
that's
so
right.
What happened? Was that your dad's job? Or?
Yeah, my dad was in the print trade and he used to work in Hull, and there were jobs going at Eric Bemrose over here in Aintree, and so we moved from God's own country, Yorkshire, to Lancashire, because I ended up playing chess for Lancashire in Roses matches.
Does that mean you're not allowed to go back to Yorkshire now?
Well, they've forgiven me.
They hound you out with pikes or something like that.
They've forgiven me.
What was it your dad was printing then? So obviously not newspapers, it was books.
I used to print the Eagle comic, for example, and they used to do a lot of newsprint.
So your dad could tamper if he wanted to with Dan Dare and things like
that. Yes, yes. He used to bring the Eagle home and we used to get advanced previews.
Absolutely,
I wish I'd
fantastic.
Kept them all. They'd be worth a fortune.
My God, yeah. I was going to buy a Beano annual the other day from the year of my birth, which is 1976, £5. I thought that's not bad, actually. But yeah, if you'd certainly got the lot, you would be in for a few quid. We'll find out which book you're going to save later. It's not the Eagle, although that would be a fine choice. And we'll find out right now what your second song choice is. What are you going for?
Well, that's Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics. It just reminds me of being at university. It was their first successful album, and that was the single that defined it, I think. And it just reminds me of being at Oxford, and my sister Maria and I were the first people from our family ever to go to university, and we ended up there, had a fantastic and very fulfilling time.
And you obviously went at the same time because you were twins.
Different colleges, though.
Yes. Which college were you in?
I was at St John's College, and Maria was down the road at Pembroke.
What are they like? I know all the colleges have different atmospheres, if you like. What was yours like?
Mine was very science-based, very, very rich college. You can actually walk from St John's in Oxford to St John's in Cambridge and never leave their land.
Right.
So they're very, very rich. So
and did
they
it
were
attract
quite
rich
complacent.
Kids or?
Yes, there were a lot of richer children at St John's when I was there, and very few women. I was only the second woman ever to graduate in philosophy, politics and economics in their 900-year history.
And did you feel looked down on in any way?
No, I was reasonably welcomed. It was politically quite tough. They weren't very empathetic with my political views. But actually, they did two things to welcome women to St John's. They painted over the mural of naked women in the bike sheds, which was good of them.
Yeah.
And this just proves that women arriving civilises everything. They replaced the toilet in the toilets. They replaced all the hard toilet rolls with soft toilet rolls.
Wonderful. And who says that?
Civilization.
The march of progress. Absolutely right. Well, I tell you what, let's go back to those days of covered up murals and soft toilet paper right now, because we are going to play the Eurythmics and Sweet Dreams on City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, that was the second choice of my guest for this hour on Take 5, who is Angela Eagle, MP. We've got three more of her choices coming up, plus we shall find out which book and which object and also which photograph she would save from the flames of her metaphorically burning home as well. That's still to come. Don't go anywhere. This is City Talk 105.9.
This is Take 5. City Talk 105.9.
City Talk 105.9. It's the home of great music and great conversation. And this is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. And in this hour, until 3 o'clock, at least, the music and conversation comes courtesy of one of our Merseyside MPs. She is Angela Eagle, the MP for Wallasey. I'm paranoid, Angela, that I'm going to say Maria by mistake. How often does that happen?
All the time, and I forgive you in advance.
Thank you. That's very good of you. Has it ever happened at a high level? Have you ever sort of been mistaken for Maria, I don't know, by the Prime Minister or the Chancellor or someone?
No, but actually my sister was once introduced to the Queen by a certain Lord Lieutenant who I won't name as me. And she just thought, oh, it'll be so embarrassing for me to correct him. So she had to pretend to be me.
That's good of her. That's,
the Queen probably knew.
That's the things you do. Are you similar in personality to her?
Oh, we're quite similar vocally. I once talked to my own answer phone because I thought it was her.
That's strange.
But we don't. Our personalities are a bit different, and certainly we don't look the same, I don't think. But we do sound very similar.
Which one's the tough one? Because isn't one twin normally tougher than the other?
Don't believe what you read. I wouldn't like to get on the wrong side of a battle with Maria. She wins.
Do you ever have any of those bizarre ESP twin moments where, you know, if you pricked one of you with a pin, the other would feel the pain?
I don't think we ever really have, but you have to remember we've lived quite closely with each other for 48 years now, so I can pretty much predict what her views will be on anything or how she'll react.
City Talk 105.9 does not condone the pricking of politicians with pins, by the way.
I'm glad to hear that. There's no ducking stool in here.
Absolutely not. Angela and Maria, and indeed your mum, you're all three of you the subject of the photograph that you're going to save from the metaphorical flames, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. There's a photograph of my mum and the both of us, which was taken on the day we both graduated from Oxford. And Maria graduated in the morning, I graduated in the afternoon, so my poor old mum and dad had to sit through both graduation ceremonies in High Latin in the Sheldonian Theatre.
My God, do they still do them in Latin now?
I don't know whether they do now, but they did then. But it's a fantastic day and memory for me because we had a great day. It was fantastic to graduate in that way, and they'd helped us so much with ensuring that we got books and information about anything we were interested in. And that was the last time I saw my mum before she was diagnosed as seriously ill. So actually she got cancer then, and she died a couple of years later. So that photograph is just the memory that we have of a great day before things got a bit difficult.
Do you think your mum knew that she was ill on that day?
I don't think she did, no. So there was no real worry. It was just that last time when everything was perfect.
It's really strange, isn't it, looking back at photographs of people just before they know that something, or you know that something bad is going to happen to them as a family. And I think there's something very moving and powerful in the knowledge that you have that they don't, and it's quite haunting, isn't it?
It is, but I see this as a great photograph because it's a very carefree photograph of a very unique day in anybody's life when they graduate, and to have both your parents there, and for it to be the first, first two of us, the first in our generation, in our whole family to go to university, that was great. For it to be such a particular form of graduation ceremony, that was great. And so I see it as, you know, a photograph that reminds me of good things, not bad.
And I'm guessing from what you said about your mum and dad that clearly they were delighted about you going to Oxford.
Did you
encounter inverse snobbery, if you like, either from within your family or from your friends and neighbours saying, don't have ideas above your station, you shouldn't be doing this?
No, certainly not. Everybody was very supportive. And in fact, my mum and dad always taught us that we had a right to go anywhere and go as far as our talent would take us, partially because they hadn't, I think.
Do you think, we hear a lot about Mickey Mouse degree courses and you know, too many people go to university now, it's too easy to go to university. Do you think the pendulum has swung a little bit too far in the direction of let's just shovel everyone into university and they can come out with worthless degrees and then we'll sort out the good ones from the bad afterwards?
No, I think it was 10% of people when I went. It's now only 50%, getting up for 50%. And I think we should probably do more. We have to have flexible ways of learning. But I think the greatest thing that you can, gift that you can give to anybody is education and the capacity to then reach whatever your own goals are.
But do you not think that some people would be better off going into a job after school where they can learn on the job, where they're not... Education doesn't seem to work for everyone. They don't seem
There's different
to appreciate
forms of education,
it.
And I think that we've got to get better at being able to train people in jobs. Some organisations are very good at it, but we don't do enough of it. And so I think that these two-year diplomas that lead to degrees are good ways in. We've got to be flexible. But the one thing I know is that education gave me all the chances I ever had and enhanced the value and enjoyment of my life immensely, and I don't think anybody should be denied it. I've met so many people who could have got degrees if they'd have had the chances, who had those life chances taken away. And my mum herself was actually in the second year of a degree at Liverpool John Moores University when she died.
You were responsible, not so much now, for people in that first flush of youth going to university, perhaps, as the ageing population, as it's now called. Is that a new phrase? Or was it called the Minister of the Ageing Population when you took over that brief?
Well, I think it's in recognition of the fact that we've now reached this tipping point where there are more older people than younger people being born. Mm. And because we're living much longer, we are actually, we've got to think about how we approach older people. I mean, I'm getting on for 50 now, but I think 50's the new 30.
Yeah,
and I'm determined in my ministerial job to make that the case.
Is that what's going to happen? Do you think we're going to have to work longer? Because you're in charge now of pensions, basically, pensions and the ageing population. Is that basically the long and short of it? We're not going to retire at 60 or 65. We're going to have to push on longer than that and keep going.
Well, Parliament has actually legislated since 1988 to put up the retirement age, so it's going up gradually to 65 for women. It will then go up and so that by 2045 it will actually be 68, but that's very, very gradual. We can expect to live, women anyway, nearly 25 years after our current retirement age at the moment. When pensions were first introduced after the Second World War in their current form, men could only look forward to one extra year of life. That's changed very rapidly, and we should all be very pleased about that and think about what implications that has for our society and how we organise things.
You can go on as an MP well after 65, can't you, at the moment?
Well, it's up to your electorate,
of course,
if they decide, or your local party if they decide that you're getting a bit past it.
But if they like you,
there's
and
no
if you want to,
compulsory retirement age.
So do you see yourself, if you can and if your party allow you and your electorate allow you, to bat on well past retirement age, or do you have plans to study or write books or do other things?
It's hard to say. I think that I'm certainly going to stand next time, and we'll see what happens after that, because being in Parliament is a very, very tough job. It's very, very long hours, and it's good to be fit to do it, but it's also good to have people that have got experience, so you have to have a mix.
Do you have fantasies, though, of other occupations that you might like to do?
I would have been a film director in another world, definitely. Very artistic in that sense, and I sometimes get a bit frustrated that I don't have the time or the chance to express that as much as I'd like.
And you'll be fighting fiercely for your seat, I'm sure, but if you did lose your seat and you had to find another job, would you try and go down that creative route, or have you got other ideas in mind?
It's hard to say. It might be a bit late now. It might be a bit late.
That's not speaking like the minister in charge of the ageing population. You should be championing their cause.
I think it's important to always keep us hobbies and interests. I'm a great photographer. I'm very interested in the moving image as well, as I said earlier. I love art and music.
Well, I tell you what, if we see you wandering around the streets of Wallasey with a camcorder, we'll know it hasn't gone well at the election, shall we? Your next song, Angela, is it's a duet written by, it's Roy Orbison and K.D. Lang with Crying, which they recorded only a year or so before Roy Orbison died. Why have you gone for this one?
Well, I love K.D. Lang. I think that she's got a spectacular voice. She's great live. I've seen her many times play live. And Crying is the height of the top of her live show and shows off her voice. And I just think it fits in a bit with my favourite photo.
And when she does the live show, does she incorporate somehow by the magic of technology the Roy Orbison vocal as well, or does she just belt it out as a solo
number? She belts it out herself.
Good stuff. Well, we're going to play the duet. It's Roy Orbison and KD Lang with Crying on City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, that's Crying by Roy Orbison and KD Lang, courtesy that one of Angela Eagle, MP, who is my guest for this hour on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. And we've got two more to come. A classic by Nina Simone. Hopefully will be appealing to everyone who likes yoghurt as well, is a small clue for you. And we mustn't forget the Pretenders, because I know Angela would not forgive us if we were to squeeze those into a little space at the end of the show. You've got to choose a book first, though. Well, it must have been a toss-up for this one. It was either Gilly Cooper's and Riders or the one you've gone for, which is the rather hefty-sounding The Making of the English Working Class by E.P. Thompson. It sounds like a good holiday read, Angela.
Well, I always read a mix of books on holiday, from novels all the way through to pretty serious social history and politics and all of that. But this book actually was a great influence. It's a groundbreaking book in that it studied what actually happened to ordinary people through history. And it had two main revelations for me, really. One, that the structure of the Labour Party is really the same as the structure of the Methodist Church, which was pioneering in its day 300 years ago, but maybe is a bit past it now. But secondly, it has a big chapter on Luddites, and we all think of Luddites as people who wrecked new machines and were against progress. But actually, the Luddites didn't do that at all. They only wrecked machines if they weren't given a fair chance to have new working practices and share in some of the benefits of new technology. But somehow that reality has been subsumed in this view that they were just thugs, but actually they were much cleverer and much more enlightened than that.
And Luddite is often a term as well used in a derogatory way against people involved in the trade union movement.
That's
and
right.
Of course, that's what you did after you left Oxford. You worked for the union that went on to become Unison. What
yes.
was it called when you
it
were
was,
there?
It was the Confederation of Health Service Employees. I used to help write the nurses and midwives pay claims and do things like that.
And of course, it's been a big week for unions in Liverpool. The TUC conference was held here.
And isn't it great that we've come back to Liverpool for the first time in 103 years?
Yeah,
I hope it won't be as long before they're back again.
Well, it does make you wonder why it's taken so long, although I guess that the fact that you've now got these great conference facilities would explain it to some extent. I was a bit disappointed this week. I don't know what you think about this, that some of the headlines were taken at that conference, very funny, by the suggestion that high heels should be banned from the workplace. Did you see that as a good thing to bring up at a TUC conference? Because to me, that just it plays right into the hands of right-wing stereotypes about what the TUC is all about.
Well, I think that motion was actually about ensuring that women who have to wear corporate clothing don't get made to wear high heels, but have a choice. So it was actually all about choice in what you wear, rather than saying you've got to wear really flat shoes and look really boring. And that was what the debate was about. It's not being quite reported the way it was.
And yet they must have known, if you're going to bring that debate up, that's how it's going to be reported. Is it an own goal, or is it water off a duck's back?
I actually think it's the relevant trade union saying there's an issue for some of our members who are being forced to wear shoes at work when perhaps they're on their feet for 8 hours a day that just aren't comfortable for them, and they have to have a choice. That's an issue in a lot of workplaces, even if it's not about clothes.
Do you wear heels at the Commons ever?
I'm not a heels person. Cuban heels, yes, but not stilettos.
Fantastic. I'm going to have to stop now before I get overheated. That's the book you're going to say, The Making of the English Working Class by E.P. Thompson. We shall find out the remaining two songs that Angela Eagle, MP, will save from her burning home, plus the object as well, in just a couple of minutes' time on City Talk 105.9.
This is Take 5, City Talk 105.9.
City Talk 105.9 is the home of great music and great conversation. This is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. Don't forget, coming up after the news at 3 o'clock, Peter McDowell will be driving you home on Drive Time 3 till 7, and the final hour of that show, as ever, 6 till 7, will be City Talks football. So if you want to get something off your chest about the Reds, the Blues or the Whites or any other team that you support, then phone Macca between 6 and 7 on the usual numbers. Angela, before you go on to your next song choice, are you a football fan?
Yes, I remember watching the World Cup in 1966, every single round. until the final, which I wasn't allowed to watch because I had to go to New Brighton with my grandparents on a day out.
What could possibly be in New Brighton that's sort of more important than the World Cup?
I just remember feeling very distressed and wandering around and forlornly asking anyone who had a radio what the score was.
We're winning. And of course, cricket is and was your game, wasn't
yes,
it, as well?
Yes, I think I'm the first woman to appear in the Lords and Commons cricket team, but I'm a bit old now. I can't get out of the way fast enough, so I just keep getting hit.
Is it just the playing that you like, or do you follow county cricket and international cricket?
I love cricket in all of its forms, and I think my ideal afternoon is to be watching a test match with the sun beating down and hopefully England in a winning position.
One word, having established that you were born on the wrong side of the Pennines, Yorkshire or Lancashire?
Well, it'd have to be Yorkshire.
That's honest. I'll take the honesty. That's good. And you can get through the angry mob outside later. What do you make of Freddie Flintoff's decision earlier this week to step down and say he won't sign a contract to play for England because he wants to pick and choose his matches?
Well, we'll see whether he recovers fitness. I mean, he's a great character and he was a great inspiration in the 2005 Ashes series, but I just think the game's taken a lot out of him physically, hasn't it? And we'll have to see whether he gets back to fitness to play.
But do you think he should play for England again? If he's saying, I'm not going to sign a contract because I might want to play big money games in India instead, should that be the door shut now? Or should he never get the chance to play for England again?
It's hard to see that he would be match fit with that kind of attitude. And it may be, I don't know, that he thinks he's coming to the end of his career as well and he's looking to see whether he can make some money.
Absolutely, and cricketers are just beginning to earn the sort of money now that footballers have been earning for 10 or 15 years, and you can see the dollar signs in their eyes. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, you've got to get the balance right here. I think if you look at what's been happening in rugby, it's gone a bit far. You've got to get good money, but if it's too much, then it starts to distort the value of the game, I think.
Do you worry? Sorry, I did promise you that we're going to talk about
the
song.
And by the way, women should get more money. You know, our women have just won the Ashes. The footballers did a fantastic job getting to the European final.
Yeah, but have you seen a women's football match? It's not quite
getting
as good,
better
is it?
All the time. I bet they'd be able to beat you.
Well, they'd be able to beat me. I'm sure of it. But now I just watch it and think, well, I don't know. I know that we're meant to get excited and stuff. I just don't think it's as fast and as furious as the man's game. But
if
I suppose
you put as much money and support in, it would be pretty quickly.
Well, it would make them run faster. Anyway, that could be a show in itself, I suppose. We better get on to your next song instead. Nina Simone, which one are you gone for?
Ain't I Got Now I Got Life,
yeah.
Which is one of many great songs that she sang. She was a fantastic pianist, Juilliard-trained, civil rights activist, just a great role model, but a fantastic singer, songwriter, and musician as well, and very active in the civil rights movement.
That's Nina Simone. Ain't Got No, I Got Life. That's hard to say, that. It's like tongue twister. Yeah, but it was her anyway. Now it's over. City Talk 105.9 is the station, the home of great music and great conversation. And this is Take Five with me, Will Batchelor, and my guest for this hour, who is Angela Eagle, the MP for Wallasey since 1992, and she hopes a few years after 2009 as well. Time will tell. We've got one more song to come from you, Angela, and I know this has been the one that you've been looking forward to the most. It's The Pretenders, I'll Stand By You. Tell us why you've gone for this. Is this what you sing to Gordon Brown when you see him?
I always stand by my leader. But no, I'm a big Pretenders fan. I went to see them from the early days at the end of the 1970s, before the first big hit single. I always managed to catch them. I think Chrissie Hynde is fantastic. Again, a great original singer-songwriter, a great voice, a great stage presence. So The Pretenders are probably my favourite band and the one I've seen the most.
Did you see them around here, or were you down in Oxford and London by that time?
All over the place. I used to go and see them when I could, when they were touring, so I've seen them up and down the country over the years, and as I said earlier, I managed to catch them this year here at the Echo Arena, and I also caught them down at Shepherd's Bush Empire in London and a fantastic show we had there. The band's had several reincarnations, really, so my favourite object here is a tambourine that was thrown by Chrissie Hynde straight to me. I caught it in
That's
the audience.
That's your cricket training coming in, isn't it?
It is, I think.
Did you give anyone else around you the elbow when you were
Nobody got the chance. I was straight there. It was always destined for me.
So that's what you're going to save from the flames. Did you? Because you've met her since, haven't you?
I do know her. In fact, when I came out, she sent me a telegram congratulating me. And in fact, she introduced...
Must have been a few years ago.
It was a few years
ago.
Did
a man come round in a cap to deliver it?
And she also introduced me to K.D. Lang. I went to see K.D. Lang one night at down in London in Hammersmith, and Chrissie was stood in the foyer waiting for friends, and I bumped into her, and she said, "Do you want to come backstage and meet K.D. Lang?" So
I did. Fantastic. So there's two of the people on this list of songs that we've rescued that you've met, K.D. Lang and Chrissie Hynde as well. Did you come to meet her through the music, through being a fan and seeing her, or did you?
That's right.
Did you manage to exploit your political connections?
No, I didn't have them when I was a Pretenders fan. So the politics and the political connections came afterwards. So yeah. I'm just a great admirer of Chrissie's.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, let's have a blast now, shall we? This is "I'll Stand By You" by the Pretenders, and it is City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. What a way to end this week's Take Five, because of course it is Friday. "I'll Stand By You" by the Pretenders. Was that one, the fifth and final choice there of Angela Eagle, MP. Now, you've heard all your records, Angela. Are you happy with them? Can you stand by your choices?
Oh, it's I can stand by you, but I'm not sure I can stand by all my choices. I've always been a huge music fan. I've got a vast collection, and it's been really difficult just putting this together. If you'd asked me for 500... that would have been about right.
Yeah. Well,
How long can the show go on?
Well, it goes on for an hour, but of course we could always see, maybe over Christmas period when things slacken up a bit, we'll do a week of Angela Eagle going through her record collection.
Yeah. I really could.
And do you still keep them? Have you got your vinyl still out on display?
Have got my vinyl, and I've also got my CDs, but now most things are on my iPod.
Which is good, and it's nice to hear. It's nice to hear as well a politician who seems to genuinely love music, because you probably see this yourself, that there are some politicians out there who I think pretend to like music so they can seem down with the kids, to coin a phrase. Do you allow yourself a smirk when you see other politicians of any political party kind of pretending to like something that they don't, whether it's music or football or fashion or whatever?
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, I think the best thing is, the only way you can really know whether that's the case is when you see them down at the front of a concert or a gig, bouncing up and down, which is where I am.
Okay, so
I'm so small, I have to be at the front.
We'll only really know if David Cameron likes a Smiths, and if we see him at a Smiths gig.
I caught a gladioli from Morrissey, thrown by Morrissey once at a concert.
You're good at catching things at concerts.
Yeah, it all seems to come to me.
Do you know, I've been to loads of concerts and loads of football matches where things have been thrown into the crowd, and they never come to me. I've been to dozens and dozens of football matches, scores of football matches, and I wish you to say this to my friends, the ball never gets kicked towards me. I just want once the ball to be kicked towards me so I can catch it and get on match
we
the
should
day
go
for a
together
second. Yeah, well, you'd catch it, that's
we'd
the trouble
go together. Well, I gave the gladioli away.
Yeah,
you never know.
Okay you can come with me, and as long as it's not a Yorkshire Lancashire cricket match, otherwise we'll probably be on
they might not let me in.
We'll probably be on different ends. Well, we shall see, shall we? Angela, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming in and sharing your Take Five choices with me today.
Thank you.
That's Angela Eagle, MP for Wallasey, on Take Five on City Talk 105.9. Don't go anywhere. Coming up after the news, Peter McDowell is here to drive you home between 3 and 7. This is City Talk 105.9. Have a great weekend.